Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Reports of the most recent layoffs are making the front pages of our newspapers with frightening regularity, and massive downsizing continues to reshape the face of American business. But what about those who remain behind? Healing the Wounds, David Noer's classic book about downsized organizations, has never been more relevant. Healing the Wounds is now being reissued as an updated 2009 edition, and drawing on case studies and original research, Noer provides executives, human resource professionals, managers, and consultants with an original model and clear guidelines for revitalizing downsized organizations and the employees left behind. David, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you, David.
David, this book is the basis of research you've been doing. Could you describe the nature of that research?
For about the past 20 years, I've been looking at what happens to people who stay in organizations after layoffs happen or after mergers cause layoffs, how they stay motivated, what happens to their mental health, how productive they are. So my focus is not on people who leave organizations, but people who remain in organizations after downsizing.
Right. What kind of short-term effects after layoffs have you found?
I actually came up with the term layoff survivor sickness, which is pretty graphic. What it says is people who remain in organizations after downsizing, particularly people who have put their social and emotional eggs in the organizational basket, who've defined who they are by where they work, end up with some combination of anger, fear, anxiety, depression. In fact, depression to the extent that about a third of the people we looked at would be depressed enough to be clinically treated. So they have some really bad anxiety and some terrible emotions.
Have you found that that disappears after a while?
It doesn't. Time does not heal all wounds. We went back to one organization after 5 years and interviewed survivors who had stayed with that organization through the first round. And then we looked at about four other organizations and found in many cases the feelings got worse. They were more cynical, less productive. So without some form of intervention by the organization, without some form of managerial strategy, survivors did not automatically get better.
All right. Did how the layoffs were handled influence the way survivors felt?
Yeah. If you're asked to sever a 25-year relationship with a company by being escorted to the door on a Friday afternoon with all your belongings in a cardboard box, that has devastating effects on the people who leave, but much more on the people who stay. So the process of how people get laid off, is there prior notice? Are they treated with dignity? Are departures celebrated? Are ways found so you don't feel like you're contagious by talking to survivors? All those ways are really important in helping the survivors of organizations. It won't cure layoff survivor sickness, but it'll make the cure a lot easier.
We've been talking about short term. Are the long term effects the same, worse? Can you elaborate on that?
I've just recently read some new research that followed a number of organizations that had layoffs and compared their productivity, looking at ROI and a number of financial indicators, with those who didn't have layoffs. It was a 12-year study. For the first 4 or 5 years, productivity as measured by financial indicators significantly dropped lower than those organizations who had not had layoffs. After about 4 or 5 years, it became the same, but never got better. So those people who think you're going to have a layoff on a Friday and have productivity on a Monday are wrong. And those people who think you're going to have a layoff on Friday and have productivity a year from that Monday without some interventions are wrong. You have to do something.
So those who perhaps in this recession had to do deep layoffs a year ago or 2 years ago, as we come out of the recession, are going to be experiencing the effects of those layoffs for some time into the turnaround.
Not only that, what they're going to find is those people who have options, those people who are good, those people who can find other jobs, those people they want to keep, won't stay. They'll go to organizations where they are more valued. So you've got to be very careful that you have a strategy to re-recruit those people you want to keep, because what you don't want to do is lose those people who can help you turn the organization around, and they will leave because they have options. What ends up in a lot of organizations is you have people who remain in the organization who don't have options, and they're there because they have to be, not because they want to be. That's not good. That's not a volunteer army. That's a draftee army.
So if you've done it wrong, you end up with individuals who are mediocre performers.
I don't know if they're mediocre, but they're not the risk takers. They don't have the skills that you need. They are unable to find jobs outside your company. So what you have is an organization with people who are there because they have to be, not because they want to be. In the new reality, I think the best organizations that are going to survive are organizations that are populated by people who are there because of the work, because they enjoy what they're doing, because they have options, And leading those people is very different than leading a group of people who are there as captives.
Exactly. David, why don't companies do something about this? Layoffs may be a necessity, but how can they address this problem of layoff sickness before it has an impact on productivity and personal feelings?
A lot of it has to do with getting the attention of top executives. What happens in most organizations, not just here, but increasingly in Europe and to some extent in Asia, is top leaders at the time of financial crisis and economic downturn are playing save the company. The chief financial officers are out trying to find different sources of funds. The marketing people are trying to do deals, maybe look for mergers. The CEO is trying to manage the board and manage the company and keep the place afloat. They've never been so self-actualized in the top. And what they lose sight of is that one level below them, people are not self-actualized. They're fearful and angry and depressed. So there's a gap between the way the top sees it usually and the way the people one level below them see it. And unless the top does something, productivity is going to decline, not increase.
Exactly. Your book includes guidelines for leadership style that would help in maintaining a positive attitude after layoffs and also handle the layoff itself. Could you describe some of those key characteristics you've identified?
What happens is the very skills that got managers where they are, planning, organizing, controlling, evaluating, will get in their way in helping turn the organization around, because what's needed are helping skills. Those leadership ings came about in 1914 with a guy named Fayol. Today, the best managers have helping skills. They're better at empowering people, all those soft things, soft is hard these days, listening, having empathy, and helping. If you have an employee who works for you who is angry, depressed, and a little anxious, you don't try to control them. You try to help them. You try to get them to externalize their emotions. So it's not that you don't want to do planning, organizing, controlling, evaluating, but you also want to do coaching, listening, helping. Most managers didn't get where they are because of those helping skills.
So what should organizations do?
A major help for many organizations is simply training line managers in basic helping skills, getting them to listen without evaluating, getting them to just reflect feelings and emotions, and getting them to shut up and listen to employees. It's magic. One organization, we required the line managers to meet one-on-one with the employees, and we gave them a script, and it sounded a little stilted. It was say hello to employee, make eye contact, ask employee how employee is feeling, reflect back feelings and emotions. But it was the most dynamite intervention that organization did because it made the managers talk to their employees about how they were feeling. And you don't have to be a trained psychologist to do that. Managers are smart. With very little help, like a 2 or 3 day training session, you can teach most managers helping skills. And that's the currency of the realm in today's organizations, not controlling skills.
You also offer some layoff leadership traps in your book. What are some of those?
If you work in an organization for a long time, you're going to carry some baggage. Let's say you're in finance and the marketing department seems to get all the budgets, seems to get all the publicity, seems to get all the raises, seems to get all the staff. Every time you have a little affront or a little thing that isn't resolved, you have this magical gunny sack that weighs you down. Gunny sacking is a psychological term. You carry around a lot of unresolved issues in most organizations. What often happens come layoff time, you've got all these issues you've stored up over the years, and suddenly the organization authorizes you to use them. So you can say, I'm now going to get those people in marketing, or I'm going to get those people in accounting because now I've got the power to lay them off, and they haven't pulled their weight anyway. And so you use the layoff as an excuse to do some unresolved interpersonal issues. It's not a very good strategy because it never works, but it happens a lot.
And what about the cost-cutting activity trap?
An activity trap is really interesting. A guy named Odierno Drucker, some of the early managerial theorists, talked about being caught in an activity trap. You get so involved in doing a task, you lose track of what you're really trying to do. A lot of managers, particularly because in this culture, maybe more in the US and in Europe than in Asia, doing something is better than doing nothing or thinking. Action is better than reflection. So a lot of times, come layoff time, managers and leaders spend more time on worrying about how the layoffs happen, who goes, compulsing over the layoff lists, worried about the process of layoffs, and they spend more of their energy on getting the layoffs done than re-recruiting the workforce or leading. So organizations don't need micromanagers on layoffs. They need people who can put the place back together again. The layoff activity trap is a particular trap on HR people who have somehow get empowered during layoffs and then lose track of the fact they need to re-recruit the people.
Is the reason for the HR people's empowerment that they know who's going to be let go?
Yeah, they're in the know. In many organizations, particularly outside the U.S., HR is seen as a second-class function, but it doesn't have the power or prestige often that other functions have. All of a sudden comes layoffs, and who decides who goes, who keeps the layoff lists, who knows who's going, who decides who's going to get outplacement, who manages the process? It's the HR people. So suddenly, for a short period of time, they're self-actualized. Oftentimes, they have big gunny sacks because the department didn't listen to them. The department didn't pay attention to their pay plans. Suddenly, they have a chance to get back. So a lot of times, it's those pieces that don't have the power that suddenly have the power.
Right. David, I have a question for you. One of the things people don't think about during a recession is the fact that there is a talent shortage out there. And after the recession is over, we're going to see people who survived downsizing moving off to find new jobs. How should companies address that in terms of retention of their very best people?
Even during the recession, what happens is employees who have options tend to find organizations that fit the place they want to be. So if you've got skills and talent that's in short supply and your organization has a downsizing process that dehumanizes people or that makes it feel like you're a cost to be reduced as opposed to an asset to be nurtured over time, if you have options, you're going to leave. When the recession ends or starts to end, what's going to happen is those people who have skills and talents are going to be going to organizations who value those skills and talents, who treat them more as independent contractors almost, who invest them in their work, not where they do the work, and lead them as colleagues, not as pawns. The successful organizations are going to find ways to attract employees who have skills and talents. The unsuccessful organizations are going to be those populated by survivors who have no options.
We were talking about some of the ways successful organizations are doing just that, and you mentioned training as one of the techniques to give them the impression of how important they are to the organization. Also to encourage a feeling of employability so that should there be a need for layoffs, they don't feel as frightened or experience some of the emotional reactions.
Training is a very important function. And unfortunately, in most organizations, training is the first piece to go. And that's not useful, assuming you've got good trainers, because a high leverage intervention is training managers in interpersonal helping skills to get them to help employees survive, to help employees be more productive. Another part of training is training them to lead empowered employees who have options. And it's a very different managerial role than to lead employees who are there because they have to be, who are basically stuck in the bureaucracy. So if you're leading a group of employees who have options, who are empowered, who if they don't like what you're doing will go somewhere else, you have to be much more of a coach, much more of a facilitator, much more of a servant leader, if you will, than just managing a bureaucracy. That requires training. It also requires selection. And it requires reinforcement, but training is a big part of it, and role modeling is a big part of it.
Before we wrap up, do you have any other key points you want to leave our audience with?
Only that I think organizations of what I call the new reality of the future will be fun places to work in. I don't think that this recession is going to be overall harmful to people, but I think if I would advise anything to employees would be maintain your skills, continue to network. Don't be seduced by organizations' attempts to tie you in over time when they give you the tie bars and cufflinks and trinkets to stay 5 and 10 years. That's fine, but stay in organizations because you like the work. Stay in organizations because that's a manifestation of who you are. Don't stay because you have no options. So that means keep networking, keep your skills up, be cautiously loyal.
Our guest today has been David Noer. He's the author of the book, Healing the Wounds. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, David.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback. So please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.